97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
It's Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Mark Koch right there. I'm Bo Matthews, and Ethan is our executive producer filling in. Mark, I finally traveled. I never travel.
Where did you go, Bo? Where'd you go?
I went to Uranus on my way to Branson.
Best fudge is in Uranus.
Dude, I saw a sign that place, for that. Have you ever been in?
I have.
It is so funny and fun, and there were so many people. We actually went there on the way back, and their fudge is phenomenal, by the way, from Uranus. But I'm gonna just plug it because it's iconic. It's a genius idea. They've got to be killing it online sales. But you walk in, the first thing I noticed, because my daughter went through basic training at Fort Leonard Wood. It's right near there, so there was a bunch of military with their families and all that stuff. But we walk in, and of course, it's just everything you imagine it to be. It was so fun.
And the puns are everywhere, on every item in the store.
I probably would get flagged from the FCC if I did any of them, but you got to go in there.
Exactly.
But we finally went down to Branson, and it had been many years. And so we went down there, got a hotel, went to a magic show. Then we went to Queen Esther at the Sight and Sound Theater.
All right.
I was surprised that it was such a ghost town because it was like a Monday through Wednesday thing.
It was
a ghost town in town. Of course, the first week, a lot of kids are back to school. So it was nice and quiet, but it's so old school. I was just so shocked. But man, Queen Esther packed it with like 2,000 people in the audience. So if you've never seen the show, travel to Branson and go check it out.
I have not. You didn't go to the Dolly Parton show you were down there? Come on. The Dixie Stampede?
You know what? They don't even call it the Dixie Stampede anymore.
They don't? Oh, it's not. They can't use the word Dixie, can they? Because that might offend some snowflake.
I guess.
What do they call it?
Because they want to feed everybody.
The Parton Stampede? You eat
the Dolly Parton Stampede. Yeah, Dolly Parton Stampede.
Oh, my goodness. I had no idea. No more Dixie chicks. No more Dixie Stampede. What in the world is going on?
And I'll be honest with you, I hadn't been to a Golden Corral in a long time, and we went there the first night. I ruined myself for the rest of the trip.
I'm sure. Strap the feed bag on at the Golden Corral. Man, that's great.
Here's the crazy thing. So the Bald Knobbers is a famous show that's been down there for years, right?
Sure.
5 million tickets sold or whatever. I didn't know what the Bald Knobbers was. Do you know what they are?
I thought it was a family name. They are. And my friend Matt Chambers, the meteorologist over at Channel 4, does a great imitation of the Bald Knobbers. Put a ball cap on him and he looks just like one of them.
Oh, no. You don't know. You don't know.
What don't I know?
Okay, I thought the Bald Knobbers, I've been hearing the name for years, billboards everywhere as you go down there. I thought it was a family name. It was actually a group of vigilantes in the Ozark region in southwestern Missouri from 1885 to 1889.
Okay. And now they're a mystical group.
I mean, the true thing, as a matter of fact, they're commonly depicted wearing black horned hoods with white outlines of their face. It's horrifying. I mean, I did some digging and research on it. I was like, this is crazy because you think Bald Knobbers, we're going to the Bald Knobbers show. Look at the background. That's all I'm saying. Just look at the background.
But that's not what it is on stage, right? They're still playing music and having a good time.
I'm not one of the 5 million tickets sold.
Oh,
I never went. I don't know.
You said you went when you were down there. Okay. All right. We
went to a magic show and then we went to Queen Esther. But anyway.
And for all of our listeners, maybe in the sound of our voice ever in Southern Illinois or somewhere, and you haven't been down I-44 toward Branson, that's where Uranus is. In case you're wondering, there's a little town called Uranus, Missouri. For some reason, I feel like we need to explain that to some people who might not have been to Uranus. Don't you?
See, I feel like I'm 7 years old when I talk about it.
I know you do. When you walk in there, everything in there is some pun related to that. There's no way around
100%.
Oh yeah.
Yep. So I pick out, I'm going to buy one small box of fudge with four pieces in it. Right. So I get that. Right. And after you look at, of course, all of the T-shirts and, the memorabilia and stuff, it's so funny. Like they had the T-shirt that is called the Fudge Packers Union. And yeah, I was just like, community isn't, either the alphabet community is behind it or I'm surprised they're not protesting it. And I hope they never do because it's funny.
Bo, you can shoot in Uranus. Did you know that? There's a shooting range attached to it. On the back side, there's a gun range attached to that store.
We are sending them an invoice for all this marketing they're getting on this show.
I mean, it's something you got to do once in your life if you're driving down I-44. Plus, the candy is good. So, I mean, you're
100%.
You get something good.
It was so funny.
Absolutely.
And actually, we've been back over a week, and we still have some of the fudge. We're just like taking little slivers of fudge. Anyway, the terrain of Branson is so crazy. If you think we're hilly around the Midwest in St. Louis and around, go to Branson if you hadn't been in a long time. It's beautiful country.
Table Rock Lake is just beautiful. And you know, some parts of it are getting a little busier during the summer than they used to be. But not anything like the Lake of the Ozarks. It's still pristine compared to that. And I love going down there. I don't usually go to the Strip. We try to avoid that. I think the last time we went to the Strip, we went to the Titanic exhibit. Did you go by that?
We drove by it. I'm thinking, okay, so just about a quarter mile down the road from there, there's like a plane crash exhibit or something. Yeah. I'm like, what is it with these tragedies that they're featuring?
It's cheesy, but it's Branson. And, you know, there's some good restaurants down there to eat in. And it's good. I'm glad you had a good vacation.
It was two nights. It was two nights away. I'm just a horrible vacation planner, but anyway.
No, glad to hear it. So coming up on the show today, because it is the Second Amendment show in the great outdoors,
we are going to talk a little bit about both. There are some changes coming up if you are a deer hunter in the state of Missouri, and I think you're going to like some of those changes, but we wanted to make sure that you were informed. Now, my friend Bo sent me a picture the other day of a big old buck right down by his property. He's kind of looking at him, and then it kind of wandered off. And I'm thinking, well, I don't have to go very far to deer hunt this year because Bo's already pointing out where the big ones are, right?
Well, I'm showing you what my wife is protecting. That's what I'm showing you.
Oh, I see.
She's the warden.
That's kind of cruel there, buddy.
Well, no, I'm just kidding. I'll keep the images coming, and I'm still fattening them up, so just so you know.
Thank you. So if you're in Missouri, there are going to be some changes. You get to hunt a little earlier if you're a gun hunter. They're adding a week for that, which is going to be good. But there are also some more chronic wasting disease check-in counties that are going to be added. So we'll get an update on all of that from Dan Zarlinga.
I was just going to say that I saw the first article I saw, the Epoch Times had the Biden administration proposing a rule that would essentially classify any American who sells guns as a firearms dealer. What is this? The Middle East? Who am I? I mean, when you hear that term, that's a little frightening.
It is. And we'll check in with my friend John Henderson. He runs a gun store. He runs a range. He knows all about these background checks and what's needed and what's not. Basically, the key is you shouldn't lie on them like Hunter Biden did, and then you won't have any problems. But they work as advertised. And we're going to get the latest on both of those stories for you today right here on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. We'll be back in just a minute.
in the sand. You can fly off a mountain top.
Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. Welcome back in here today alongside Bo Matthews, of course, and Ethan Bright, who is in this week for the vacationing Carl Middleman, who left us for a better place, Hawaii. How about that?
I did finally get a picture from him.
Me too.
Did you get more than one? Because I just got one.
I got one the other day from Carl in front of the Arizona Memorial out there, the USS Arizona Memorial, with a rainbow that had formed over it. I guess it had been raining. And that was pretty cool. So, and then the one you and I got with him in front of Trump Tower somewhere in Hawaii.
Yeah, I saw that. That's the one I got. You know, good for him. Everybody needs a break. Lord knows you're the king of breaks.
Well, thank you. This year, that has certainly been true, for sure. You know, this week in the news, of course, is the story about an indictment that's probably looming from a grand jury for Hunter Biden regarding him lying on a form 4473, right? Where it asked if you are taking any illicit drugs, and he answered no, which was a flat-out lie because we know he was a drug addict at the time he bought this handgun. It's documented terrible. From his computer, his laptop. There are pictures, everything. So the plea deal fell through, and now the prosecutors announced that they have a deadline of like the 23rd, I think, of September to try to go to a grand jury and get an indictment on this. So that's going to be interesting. But the other side of this is Joe Biden's all worried about background checks. And his own son lied on one, but he's now trying to kind of go through the ATF like the back door to get around Congress and stiffen requirements for background checks. Did you hear about that?
I did. I've been keeping up on it because I'm on this little radio show called Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors.
Yeah.
No, seriously. Here's the thing. We're all distracted by so many things in this world, Mark, and you don't know unless you're listening to a show like this where you're understanding, the sparkle is over here, but the knife is over here. And that's why we want to keep people on top of things.
Yeah, very much. So I wanted to find out, based on these regulations, what they're trying to do is make it, I believe, illegal that if you wanted to give a gun or sell a gun to your son, for example, or your grandpa wanted to give it to his grandchild, they don't want that to happen without a background check, even though it's already illegal to give a gun to somebody who can't legally own it. But law, that doesn't seem to matter to these people on the left. So I wanted to get to the bottom of this. Who are they targeting? People who already have a federal firearms license? Well, that would be like our friends at the range. So I wanted to ask exactly what this was all about. John Henderson. John, welcome back.
Good morning, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's always great to have you on here, my friend. We appreciate your support of the program. I saw this story last week that I wanted to ask somebody about who happens to have a FFL, a firearms license, and that is the Biden administration claiming that they're going to institute a rule that would require more firearms dealers to run background checks. I thought federal firearms dealers already had to run background checks. I'm really confused about how he's trying to just sort of do an end run here.
Well, it's really not about making existing firearms dealers, FFL dealers, run more background checks. Every firearm that we transfer or sell has to have a background check done on it, period. And this even includes federal law enforcement officers, FBI, ATF, it doesn't matter who it is. You have to go through a background check to personally buy a firearm. What it's really doing is redefining who is a dealer. So the current law requires that if you're a dealer in firearms, that you have to have a federal firearms license in order to do that. And there was a definition over there of what a dealer was. It was basically you were in business to try to make a living buying and selling guns, layman's terms. I don't have the exact verbiage in front of me. But what they're wanting to do is redefine that. So if you sell a gun in the course of a year and make a profit, you are now a dealer, which now puts you in the camp of having illegally sold a firearm, which is a felony, and it's 10, 20 years in prison. It's all kinds of issues. So basically, they're trying to make it so that if you wanted to sell a firearm to your son or to a friend or someone known to you that is a good guy, that you as a private citizen couldn't do that, and you couldn't do it and make a profit.
That's amazing.
So it's just basically they want every firearm sale to have to go through a dealer. And because there's, you know, it's just a backdoor way of trying to continue to register firearms.
Yeah, this is what they often refer to as the gun show loophole, right?
Yes, but here's the thing. There is no gun show loophole.
Right.
So if you go to a gun show and there's a guy there who is just a private individual who's trying to sell a firearm, and that's just one guy trying to sell a firearm. It's no different than you buying it from your neighbor. As long as you're a good guy and he's a good guy, it's already illegal to sell a gun to a guy that you know is a bad guy. It's already illegal. All the firearms you see at the tables, all the FFL dealers there, they already have FFL licenses. They're already running background checks while you stand there and wait at the gun show. So the majority of guns bought and sold at a gun show are already going through a background check, just like the majority every day do. So it's a fallacy. It's an argument that isn't going to do anything to affect crime or anything else. It's just trying to make it harder for the average law-abiding citizen, which is virtually everything they do when it comes to gun control, make it harder for the average person.
Yeah, and I agree. And, you know, they're cracking down on these so-called ghost guns. They've tried to do that as well. And I've made the point here before that, you know, I've got a few guns before I lost them all in that boating accident. I would not know how to buy a gun and assemble it. I mean, I love guns, but you have to have a certain skill set, don't you, and certain tools to put together a firearm?
You would. I mean, when you buy an 80% receiver and you were going to do that yourself back when you could do that before they made that illegal, it just took a certain amount of mechanical skill. Not super difficult, but here's the thing, Mark. If you are building your own guns for the purpose of selling them, that's already something you have to have a FFL for. It actually is a specific type of FFL. It's already illegal.
Yes.
If you're buying them and selling them on the street, already illegal. All the things they want to stop with these new laws and these new rules, and it's important to note, this new rule on making basically so the universal background check, what they're calling it, but it's really about forcing everybody to go through a background check regardless of where you buy your firearm for. So, you know, you literally can't sell one to a family member without taking it to a gun shop and going to a background check. It's already illegal if you're doing that for the purpose of making money and you're not an FFL, or if you're selling them on the street. All these things are already illegal.
Yeah.
They just want to make the average person's life more difficult. And ultimately, I think they want to make sure that they know as much as possible where every single firearm in this country is, because their ultimate goal, and you can go and read the White House fact sheet on it. You can read, I mean, there's thousands of documents and statements out there by gun control advocates. What they really ultimately want is they want to take the guns away from the average person. That's their goal. And it's just they've just taken a long-term approach to what they can't do through legislation. They're trying to do through rulemaking, which is what this latest proposal is.
It's a great point. John Henderson, my guest from the Range St. Louis West, 14803 Manchester Road out in Baldwin. And I do want to announce, you probably heard me talking about it already, on the 23rd of this month, you're having a customer appreciation day. I'm going to be out there from at least 10 to noon that day. It's always a great time. John, what do you got going on that day?
So we do this every year, so it's a small carnival-like event. We have tons of specials, giveaways. So we're going to have Hornady, Desert Tech, Leopold, Crossbreed, Vertex, Proper, First Form. Lots of people, lots of different vendors there. Gun Owners of America is going to be here to help answer some of your questions about these things that are going on in the Second Amendment legal world. We're having a drawing for Glock 45. We're donating food for Four Sister Food, so every time you drop off a canned good or any type of toiletry item, you're going to get a ticket to register for the drawing for the Glock 45. And then, again, the funny games, and then this radio personality I think you mentioned that's going to be out there. So
we're looking forward to that. I did hear a rumor that you're going to be in the dunking booth this year. Is that correct?
So that's a nasty rumor that comes up every single year. I don't know how that happens. But, yes, that rumor is out there.
Yeah, I've heard that. John, I'll look forward to seeing you on the 23rd out at the range. I appreciate you, my friend. Thanks.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
Yeah, we'll talk again soon. John Henderson, owner, general manager at the Range St. Louis West out there. Fantastic place. So again, I hope everyone can show up at the range on the 23rd. It's going to be a good time. I'm hoping that we get a big crowd out there. It's almost, you heard John, like a carnival-like atmosphere. There's going to be a dunking booth and things for the kids, and you can win some swag. And they got all those representatives from the different gun manufacturers will be there. They get a chance to win a handgun if you're in on the raffle, if you donate food. So 10 to noon that day, the 23rd, I'll be at the range. Bo Matthews, I think you should make an appearance.
Absolutely. No, I love the place. And for people that have never seen it or been to it, it is an impressive place for, you know, gun needs and the gun range itself. That's why they call it the range. But I'd love to see the parking lot filled up with a bunch of people.
I think that'll happen. It happened last year.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, well, we've got more of Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. Deer hunters, unite. There's a big change going on at the Missouri Department of Conservation. We're going to talk to Dan Zarlenga about those changes coming up next. So stay right there. It is Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors alongside Mark Cox. I'm Bo Matthews, and our executive producer this week, Ethan, doing a fine job, by the way. This segment is brought to you by Razorback Armory. They had a great, significant event just a couple of weeks ago, and want to thank everybody who came out to that significant event. Whatever firearms you were looking for, your gun concierge is Razorback Armory on Manchester Road. Find them at RazorbackArmory.com, and I might run into you at the store. What a great crew over there. Brad and Jesse doing a great job.
Yeah, love
all right,
those folks.
This they are fantastic. You know what, I love all gun people.
Oh, yeah,
I really do.
Absolutely.
Ted Nugent to the guys here in St. Louis. So we welcome in Dan Zarlenga from the Missouri Department of Conservation, because if you're a deer hunter and you are getting ready for this year, you need to know that there's been some regulation changes, and that's why we always bring in Dan, our expert on Missouri deer hunting. Welcome to the show, sir. How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing this morning?
Yeah.
Good. Welcome back.
Doing great. Good to have you back, Dan. You know, I saw this article just the other day regarding some, I don't know, I'd call them fairly significant changes for the upcoming deer hunting season, and we thought we get you back on here to talk about a few of those.
Yeah. I mean, we actually do have some pretty significant changes this year, and they're kind of going in the direction of liberalizing things a bit by adding some additional opportunities for hunters to harvest deer. And just kind of a quick overview of the changes, this is totally new. We've added an early antlerless portion starting October 6th through the 8th in 100 counties in the state. So that's you know, quite a bit early for firearms hunting. So that gives folks an opportunity to harvest some antlerless deer. Then we've also, on the kind of the back end of our regular firearms portion in November, we've added an additional CWD management zone portion that runs from November 22nd to the 26th. And that gives hunters an opportunity to do some more hunting in our CWD management zone counties. So that's more opportunities there. And then we've also expanded the antlerless permit numbers in many of our counties. So those are some things that kind of give hunters more of an opportunity to hunt. And we do have some reasons for doing that. And some of the main reasons we have for doing that are We did have to expand our CWD management zone counties by 14 counties this year, okay, based on findings from last season, some additional positives.
So pause there for a second, if you don't mind, Dan. But so there may be people going out to hunt this year in counties that have not been part of that chronic wasting checks before. So people really need to do a little bit of homework to find out whether or not their county's been added to it.
Well, basically, yeah. So you can find that on our website. We've got a list of all the counties and a map with all the counties. So basically, though, all the CWD management zone counties that are within that zone, that November 22nd to the 26th edition is good for. So basically, any counties in that management zone.
Okay, good. Clearly, in testing last year, they found enough reason to suspect it has spread. Is that the problem?
Well, yes, it has spread. So okay, we've had it's been detected in 14 additional counties. So we've added Dallas to the CWD management zone counties. Now, it is expanding, obviously. However, I need to stress here that in all the counties where it has been detected, we are at less than 1% detection rate. So it's extremely low prevalence. There is one around St. Genevieve where it got up to 1.3%, but it's extremely low prevalence. So it's a little bit disheartening to see that it's spreading, but we're not totally surprised by that. But what we are encouraged by is the low prevalence, which means that our management strategies seem to be effective in keeping the disease at a low prevalence.
Well, I think that's great news. I'm having a little technical difficulty here, boys. Sorry about that. What's another aspect of these changes that are happening for this fall?
Well, that's kind of the main ones right there. You've got that new antlerless portion for firearms October 6th through the 8th. And these are the same counties that are open to antlerless portion, the normal antlerless portion in December. Then you've got the additional November 22nd to the 26th firearms portion in the CWD management zone counties. And then we're also increasing the antlerless permit numbers as well. We've increased them from 2 to 4 in 85 of our counties. So, again,
wow,
to get the specifics on that, I'd recommend going to our site. Or you can go to the 2023-24 deer and fall deer turkey hunting pamphlet, which is available online or most any NBC office or permit retailer. So those are the main changes that we've made. And the other reason, too, and this is, you know, encouraging, is our deer population is really healthy. And in most every county in the state, we are really good, solid deer populations, and we are pretty much right at the threshold of capacity, carrying capacity for these counties. So by, opening up a little more opportunities for hunting, we're going to help keep those deer at those levels that are comfortable for the carrying capacity of the counties they're in. So that's another reason we're doing this, too. So it's kind of a combined reason to help control the spread of CWD, because keeping the populations down is going to help control the spread of that disease. And then, of course, we're going to help manage them, since hunting is our main management tool for, you know, keeping deer numbers in check.
Yeah,
it'll serve that purpose as well.
So Dan Zernling, our guest from the Missouri Department of Conservation, do you speculate that then that the harvest will be bigger this year because of this additional week that you're adding? And that's obviously the goal. I mean, does the department have a target number in mind?
I'm not sure if we have a target number or not, but we are anticipating to have yield more harvest. And obviously we've added that antlerless portion there early in the season in October there. And, you know, since the female deer are the ones that tend to have the fawns, you know, that's going to help, you know, we're anticipating that help controlling that population growth and spread. So I don't have an exact target number of what we're expecting, but we are doing that in the hopes of seeing a higher harvest, and I suspect we will, because that'll give just the more opportunity for hunters out there to, you know, to get out there and hunt. And we've kind of tried to time it. You know, a timing is always kind of a balance, but we tried to time it like that antlerless one, where the deer are starting to move in early October. They're starting to get into the beginning of the rut. But we find that most of our archery hunters, who will also be hunting at that same time, tend to favor later October more. So we're trying to, or mid to late October. So we're trying to time that where we're not hitting with the bulk of archery hunters, but we're still getting into that point where the deer are moving around and getting into that some of that rut behavior that'll help hunters out. So that's kind of how we were trying to time it as far as that
goes. Yeah, Dan. So when a decision like this is made, is it a committee that does this? Is it voted on? Is it data that you've been following for several years? And is this a one-off year? Will it go back to the old schedule for hunting season next year?
Yeah, so my crystal ball is a little cloudy there. So I don't know whether it's going to what's going to happen next year. And it may depend on how this year turns out. But I will say this, our regulations are always based on data that we get from our population studies and the data we have with the CWD testing. They do go through a regulation committee that does decide on, propose the regulations, I should say. They're usually put out for hunter or public feedback, and then their final sign-off is for our commission. Our conservation commission signs off on the final regulation and okays them. So it is a process. It's not just some one guy making a random decision. It's
haven't seen him once all weekend. House ain't cold, my phone ain't ringing. Didn't even say that he was leaving. It must be hunting season. I can shop online, drink all the wine, binge a whole season of The Real Housewives.
It is Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors alongside Mark Cox. I'm Bo Matthews, and our executive producer this week, Ethan, doing a fine job, by the way. This segment is brought to you by Razorback Armory. They had a great, significant event just a couple of weeks ago, and want to thank everybody who came out to that significant event. Whatever firearms you were looking for, your gun concierge is Razorback Armory on Manchester Road. Find them at RazorbackArmory.com, and I might run into you at the store. What a great crew over there. Brad and Jesse doing a great job.
Yeah, love
all right,
folks.
This they are fans. You know what, I love all gun people.
Oh, yeah,
I really do.
Absolutely.
Ted Nugent to the guys here in St. Louis. So we welcome in Dan Zarlenga from the Missouri Department of Conservation, because if you're a deer hunter and you are getting ready for this year, you need to know that there's been some regulation changes, and that's why we always bring in Dan, our expert on Missouri deer hunting. Welcome to the show, sir. How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing this morning?
Yeah,
good. Welcome back.
Doing great. Good to have you back, Dan. You know, I saw this article just the other day regarding some, I don't know, I'd call them fairly significant changes for the upcoming deer hunting season, and we thought till we get you back on here to talk about a few of those.
Yeah, I mean, we actually do have some pretty significant changes this year, and they're kind of going in the direction of liberalizing things a bit by adding some additional opportunities for hunters to harvest deer. And just kind of a quick overview of the changes, this is totally new. We've added an early antlerless portion starting October 6th through the 8th in 100 counties in the state. So that's quite a bit early for firearms hunting. So that gives folks an opportunity to harvest an antlerless deer. Then we've also, on the kind of the back end of our regular firearms portion in November, we've added an additional CWD management zone portion that runs from November 22nd to the 26th. And that gives hunters an opportunity to do some more hunting in our CWD management zone counties. So that's more opportunities there. And then we've also expanded the antlerless permit numbers in many of our counties. So those are some things that kind of give hunters more of an opportunity to hunt. And we do have some reasons for doing that. Some of the main reasons we have for doing that are we did have to expand our CWD management zone counties by 14 counties this year based on findings from last season, some additional positives.
So pause there for a second, if you don't mind, Dan. But so there may be people going out to hunt this year in counties that have not been part of that chronic wasting checks before, so people really need to do a little bit of homework to find out whether or not their county's been added to it?
Well, basically, yeah. So you can find that on our website. We've got a list of all the counties and a map with all the counties. So basically, though, all the CWD management zone counties that are within that zone, that November 22nd to the 26th edition is good for. So basically, any counties in that management zone.
Okay, good. Clearly in testing last year, they found enough reason to suspect it has spread. Is that the problem?
Well, yes, it has spread. So okay. We've had it's been detected in 14 additional counties. So we've added Dallas to the CWD management zone counties. Now, it is expanding, obviously. However, I need to stress here that in all the counties where it has been detected, we are at less than 1% detection rate. So it's extremely low prevalence. There is one around St. Genevieve where it got up to 1.3%, but it's extremely low prevalence. So it's a little bit disheartening to see that it's spreading, but we're not totally surprised by that. But what we are encouraged by is the low prevalence, which means that our management strategies seem to be effective in keeping the disease at a low prevalence.
Well, I think that's great news. I'm having a little technical difficulty here, boys. Sorry about that. What's another aspect of these changes that are happening for this fall?
Well, that's kind of the main ones right there. You've got that new antlerless portion for firearms October 6th through the 8th. And these are the same counties that are open to antlerless portion, the normal antlerless portion in December. Then you've got the additional November 22nd to the 26th firearms portion in the CWD management zone counties. And then we're also increasing the antlerless permit numbers as well. We've increased them from 2 to 4 in 85 of our counties. So again, to get the specifics on that, I'd recommend going to our site, or you can go to the 2023-24 deer and fall deer turkey hunting pamphlet, which is available online or most any NDC office or permit retailer. So those are the main changes that we've made. And the other reason too, and this is, you know, encouraging, is our deer population is really healthy. And in most every county in the state, we are at really good solid deer populations, and we are pretty much right at the threshold of capacity, carrying capacity for these counties. So by, opening up a little more opportunities for hunting, we're going to help keep those deer at those levels that are comfortable for the carrying capacity of the counties they're in. So that's another reason we're doing this too. So it's kind of a combined reason, help control the spread of CWD, because keeping the populations down is going to help control the spread of that disease. And then, of course, we're going to help manage them, since hunting is our main management tool for, you know, keeping deer numbers in check.
Yeah.
It'll serve that purpose as well.
So Dan Zernling, our guest from the Missouri Department of Conservation, do you speculate that the harvest will be bigger this year because of this additional week that you're adding? And that's obviously the goal. I mean, does the department have a target number in mind?
I'm not sure if we have a target number or not, but we are anticipating to have yield more harvest. And obviously we've added that antlerless portion there early in the season in October there. And, you know, since the female deer are the ones that tend to have the fawns, you know, that's going to help, you know, we're anticipating that help controlling that population growth and spread. So I don't have an exact target number of what we're expecting, but we are doing that in the hopes of seeing a higher harvest, and I suspect we will, because that'll give just more opportunity for hunters out there to, you know, to get out there and hunt. And we've kind of tried to time it. You know, a timing is always kind of a balance, but we tried to time it like that antlerless one, where the deer are starting to move in early October. They're starting to get into the beginning of the rut. But we find that most of our archery hunters, who will also be hunting at that same time, tend to favor later October more. So we're trying to, or mid to late October. So we're trying to time that where we're not hitting with the bulk of archery hunters, but we're still getting into that point where the deer are moving around and getting into that some of that rut behavior that'll help hunters out. So that's kind of how we were trying to time it as far as that.
Yeah,
goes.
Dan. So when a decision like this is made, is it a committee that does this? Is it voted on? Is it data that you've been following for several years? And is this a one-off year? Will it go back to the old schedule for hunting season next year?
Yeah, so my crystal ball is a little cloudy there. So I don't know whether it's going to what's going to happen next year. And it may depend on how this year turns out. But I will say this, our regulations are always based on data that we get from our population studies and the data we have with the CWD testing. They do go through a regulation committee that does decide on, propose the regulations, I should say. They're usually put out for hunter or public feedback, and then their final sign-off is for our commission. Our conservation commission signs off on the final regulation and okays them. So it is a process. It's not just some one guy making a random decision. It's definitely
that's what I'm picturing.
Yeah,
it's like The Office.
One guy's making the rules.
You know, Dan,
it's not that simple.
As somebody who's hunted for a number of years in one of the counties affected by the CWD rules. For people maybe who haven't, maybe refresh our memories of how that goes. Isn't it the first 2 days of the regular hunting season when those stations are open and you're expected to come and check your deer?
Yes, that's absolutely true. So during the first 2 days, which will be this year, November 11th and 12th, a Saturday and Sunday, when the season November firearms, you acquire deer, you see the sampling station that exists in the county specified. So, again, that's something you would need to go to our site or the fall deer turkey pamphlet, and it's got a map clearly delineated with colors of what counties you need to bring them in. So, yes, you do need for those first 2 days. After that, you're not required to, but you certainly can bring your deer in at any point voluntarily. So if you want to bring, if you're an archery hunter and you get a deer on September 29th, you can bring it in to one of our, not to one of these stations because they won't be active, but to one of our offices. We have a number of stations you can bring in or even just drop off the head. We have some freezers where you can drop off the head and fill out the paperwork and at any time you want. So we do encourage hunters, no matter when they get their deer, we will welcome them to bring them in to get tested, because that's just more data for us and that helps us. But hunters are required for those first 2 days of the November portion, if they hunt in a CWD zone that's been specified for sampling, to bring them in for sampling.
Yeah. Is it just me or are other people in other counties seeing more roadkill of these big beautiful deer? I was coming back from St. Louis Skeet and Trap, and I saw a mama and a baby on the side of the road, and you knew it was one accident, but does it seem like it's more right now?
Yeah, that's tough to say. I don't know. I don't have any numbers on that off the top of my head here. And there's a lot of subjectivity to that, too. I mean, it's once you see one, you start to become more sensitive to it. You more notice it in other places. Could be that that particular area you're driving through does have maybe the deer population has been expanding there. It also depends on the time of year. One of the messages we like to get out to folks, all folks, is anyone driving in these areas during anywhere near the rut season, especially, October, November, and maybe even later September into early December, deer are moving around a lot more. And so there's just a lot more incidents of them crossing roads, and more deer on more roads and more cars equal accidents, unfortunately, sometimes.
Is there anything we should be doing? Is there a number we should call when we see that? I always ask this question because I always have to refresh my memory. Do you call law enforcement? Who do you call and let them know, hey, you've got a roadkill sitting here?
Oh, you mean if you see a deer? Yeah, I would go ahead and call either your local law enforcement, county sheriff, county, or your local police department, or your county conservation agent, and let them know. And we do, there are contractors, like sometimes MoDOT has contractors that will remove those deer and stuff like that. But you can notify that, and they can then pass that word along to the contractors to remove that. So, and that's also a possibility. I guess you could call MoDOT too, because they are a lot of times the ones doing working with the contractors there.
Yeah. Well, it's shocking, actually, how fast time moves. I can't believe we're effectively a month, less than a month, from when the initial season's going to open up for either bow hunters or, in this case, a week of gun season. It's upon us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, our bow hunters can go out there in about a week or so, September 15th, and then... yes, then we have this new early antlerless portion now, which is, you know, that is quite a big development because, you know, that's in early October. And historically, we've never had really, long backs, I can remember at least, any, you know, firearms hunting that early. The earliest we've had would be the first portion of the youth season. So this is pretty big deal. October 6th through 8th in 100 counties, we have that early antlerless portion now.
No change this year in terms of... additional antlered deer that you can take. Or the number of antlerless deer, as many permits as you want to buy.
Well, we generally know the antlered deer has stayed the same.
Okay.
We have added the additional antlerless permits.
Okay.
So for
right.
certain for about 85 counties, we've increased that from 2 to 4. So there's been some increase there, yes,
good,
for the antlerless.
Well,
and again, that's because of the population, you know, control thing.
And if people are confused at all about any of this, where's the best place for them to go? Your website?
Yes, I would say mdc.mo.gov. We've got like a hunting tab at the top, and you can search hunting by season, by species, or however it's easier for you to, you know, get the information. And you can get our fall 2023-24 fall deer and turkey hunting pamphlet. And that's available online as a PDF you can download. Also, you can go to any permit retailer where you buy your permits. You can go into any MDC office and get them.
Oh, nice.
And there's also, we have a Mo Hunting app now. So those of us who are in the 21st century can download an app. It's free for Android and iPhones. And you can do a lot of things through that app. You can get a lot of information. You can buy your permits through the app. When you get here, you can notch your tags through the app. You can do a lot of things. And you can have that app on you in place of a paper permit. So if you get contacted by an agent, you can show them that app. Kind of like your driver's license you can do now. So that's just another way to try to make things easier for folks. And you can still do the paper one if you want. You can still... do the old-fashioned paper thing and you know, zip tie it to your deer if you want, but you can also have the app on your phone now too.
That's pretty slick. Love all the work you guys do, and you are definitely not rested on your laurels as we're getting through this change and the app and all that cool stuff. So do you have hunting IT people? Are they cool like that, or did you have to hire some 14-year-olds to come in and create that app?
That's a good point. I'm not sure. I wouldn't be surprised if there aren't 14-year-olds working for us that I don't know about in a secret room.
No, I'm just kidding. Of course.
Yeah. Dan?
No, I know what you're saying, though. Exactly. Yeah. So some days it feels like it takes a 14-year-old to figure some of these things out.
Dan, we appreciate your time. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate being on, guys. You guys take care and stay safe out there.
We will do it. Dan Zarlinga there from the Missouri Department of Conservation. And just thought people needed to be well aware that there are some additional opportunities to hunt and some other things you needed to know about, Bo, before we head into this hunting season. I'm going to the Bo Matthews estate. I understand it's quite private down there, and I can sit on the roof.
No. I'm married to a vegetarian.
Oh, well, I don't have to leave the meat for you. I'll take it with me.
Oh, no, I would eat it, but, you know, I'm respecting my wife. No, but it wasn't that beautiful. I sent you that picture in that video.
Oh, yeah. Yes, you did.
That was beautiful. It was a nice big buck, so you probably shouldn't have been taunting me like that.
Well, that's what I do. But, yeah, we feed it, we pet it, we've named it, so we're good.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. Hope you have a great weekend. We'll see you next week.
Share the show. See you, boys. Oh,
more at 971talk.com.